This week on The Droids, we're back to talk about the finale of Andor, Episode 12, Rick's Road. It all had been building to this, and if you didn't have an anvil in your back pocket, now you do after those speeches throughout this episode. All that and more on The Droids.
Gong, gong, gong.
Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
These are the droids.
I'm the one.
There's always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellions are built on hope.
We are looking for the droids.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan and Chris, I am Mike, and we have gotten through one season of Andor. And what a run it's been. Two and a half months of watching this show, and it's been such a bright point for me every week, not only to watch the episode, but to talk about it on this podcast. But then you get little things like, you know, someone in a tower usually is spending their time gonging away, knocking stormtroopers out and knocking them off for a nice tumble down to the surface below.
I gotta say, if you see anyone with a blunt object in that town, run away. Run
yeah, it's a brick
away.
Or it's a
We'd like to also, if you're here because you saw the incendiary and viral tweet that's going around these days.
Yeah, we
from the Droids Pod, welcome.
When Twitter goes down, we go up.
if you're someone who's here because you thought it was controversial and you support fascism? That's weird. We'll take the listen, I guess.
I mean, look, the metrics are all that matter. That's really all that
is. A play is a play.
Listen, a play is a play, but if you were offended that someone was saying fascism is bad, maybe look inward.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk about that.
And we'll, you know, stick with us and we'll give you a little more detail.
Yeah, the majority of the reactions were positive in getting the joke. I think there was some negativity, but most of it was pretty positive and really fun to do that and get some people.
Great.
If you're listening to us for the first time, you know, this is the Droid
Spot.
We've been here for 200 plus episodes now. Yeah. You can go back and listen to our episodes where we talk about each individual movie from the series. We've done each series so far that's been released on Disney Plus. We've talked about leaked scripts. We've gone through one book of Light of the Jedi. We'll eventually get to those final five chapters, we promise you.
One of these days.
And
watch
we're also
Ryan play through Fallen Order on YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys, when someone, if you get a new listener to the pod, and this has happened before, and they ask where they should start, what are the ones, I always tell them to start with the prequel rewatches.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's a solid starting point.
Not to say that they should start there and not go back further, but like, it's like, hey, if you like this, you'll like the show.
Yeah, and I think I'd say that also about our instant reaction to The Last Jedi. If you enjoy that episode, you'll probably like the show as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So, I mean, I guess if you're listening to this, you're starting here or have already listened. So
yeah, you go back. Yeah. I mean, the leak to me, the leak script. If that was just a fun run of it's like what four or five episodes of just us in disbelief. That script was so good and just riffing, and it was the kind of the start of the pandemic. So it's just, they're just loaded. There's a lot of layers in there.
So, hey, if you're just new to the show, or if you're, you have a friend who's on the fence about listening, they say, why should I listen to that show? Give them these reasons that we just gave.
Yeah.
And I would say that if you already listen or have been listening, like, rate, review us on your favorite podcast platform, preferably Apple iTunes, or what is that? Why do I say this every time? Apple Podcasts. And Mike, why would they want to do that?
Well, it's really relevant that you brought that up. For new listeners and old listeners, those who leave a review on Apple Podcasts, good or bad, they're going to be entered into a chance to win a R2-D2, the full Lego, which is 1/6 scale. For those of you who've been listening a long time, that's the same size as the Millennium Falcon that Chris built with his brother. And for those who are new to it, yes, Chris built a Millennium Falcon that size. It has been seen from space.
Yeah.
Not made a trip to space.
Crazy.
But it's been seen in space.
A 1 million plus Lego singular bricks.
Lego. Yeah, you're right. But we are offering up the R2-D2. Value of over $200, shipped to you, no cost to you. We did mention in our last episode that you had up until the holiday to get your Apple Podcast review in. We're going to give a little holiday extra special time. If you're listening to this, you have until December 1st. December 1st will be our cutoff.
That's
those of you who've entered before, you know, we still, you're going to have a great chance at it, but we're going to give it to December 1st for those of you who are new who are listening. So just leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We will then announce the winner on one of our shows going forward. You'll be able to then reach out to us on droidspod@gmail.com And we will let the winner in our episode right after December 1st. So the first episode that we do after December 1st, I don't recall what day of the week that is, but coming up very soon, I think that's what, Thursday?
I think it's Thursday, yeah.
We will announce the winner next Thursday. So get in your reviews and we will give you a chance to win that R2-D2, which is really pretty spectacular. And Chris, you've built it. You know it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of little secrets in it.
So is this, you built it and deconstructed it? Or is this a different?
This is brand new. We've got a brand new one.
I genuinely didn't know. I was like, that sounds like more work than just buying one.
No.
Chris just put it all in a tub. And a Ziploc, and it's set in your way, and figure it out.
I built it in a bathtub also.
Trumbo? You're writing scripts and building Lego in a bathtub? Exactly.
We'll throw a silica gel in there, and it'll dry it off on the ride.
And shipping, yeah. Easy enough.
Well, December 1st, get that in, but welcome to everyone. We're excited to talk about the finale of Andor. And this is season one in the books. I think coming into this, you know, we knew where this was leading was very well telegraphed in the episode prior, in episode 11. We knew the way that so many of our favorite characters were all going to be converging from the Empire side and from the Rebellion side. But I think one of the things that surprised me about this episode was the reminder of, oh yes, this is a finale, but also a to be continued. And I don't mean that with any negativity. I thought this was a very satisfying conclusion to this first season, especially with all these character arcs, again, coming together. That was all really well done. But I do think there's still some things where I'm like, okay, so what is Cyril's main play in all of this? And we're not meant to find out here. Not that there's anything bad about him getting together with Dedra, because I do think there's going to be more of that story going forward. But I looked at this as like, this was a very wonderfully done finale of television. And I'm so excited that this is not the end and that they continue to build and set up in this episode what we're going to see going forward. And that was really refreshing to me. To not feel like it was like, oh, we've ended this off, this story completely, and we're not thinking about where it's going. They clearly, I think, it sounded like Tony Gilroy basically wrote this whole thing before they ever started shooting. Now, individual episodes, there was probably a lot more things he was doing with the writer's room. But in terms of where they're going and what they want to do in the buildup to Rogue One, this has been very clear in their minds of what they want to do. And this episode helped continue on the road to where we're going to get to with this series in another 12 episodes. So I thought that was great.
Yeah.
It also had that quality that a lot of things like this tend to have when they're really good, which is when it's ending, the emotional stakes have been so personal, you know, and that when it's ending, you realize that it was an epic.
Yeah.
Instead of the whole time it kind of insisting to pardon the for it, but insisting upon itself that it is epic, you realize at the end that you're like, the scope of this is very big. There are a lot of parties involved. There's a lot of like institutions involved. And like when they were setting up that whole thing on, you know, the funeral procession, and that's a pretty small, that's a very condensed location, which is so great because you realize in episode one, they spend all that time seeing everybody like get ready for work, which we commented on, which was just a cool moment. But in this episode, you're like, oh, they were spending the time establishing this space.
Yep.
So that we knew exactly where everything was.
So we knew the scope of the whole, like the city. And yeah, I mean, they did the legwork though. That was great.
Yeah. And it had this, like this kind of bookending of like starting there, ending there, that really helped you realize like, man, oh man, we've like a lot has happened and a lot has changed since the beginning of this story that makes it feel epic.
Well, I mean, when I'm watching Cassian kind of sneak through those towers and kind of it felt like a classic, like late 60s, early 70s, like Cold War film or like a movie like the Battle of Algiers, where it's like there's a lot of buildup for this kind of uprising that's going to happen. And it, by giving it like that space, as you kind of mentioned, like setting up those details, like I was kind of thinking in my head, I was like, this guy was just in a space prison a little bit ago. And like, I was thinking of how invested I was in that whole chapter. Hmm. And I was just excited to see like, where can we, like, how can the stakes be even raised higher?
Yeah. And I thought it was just such a brilliant move to have it come back to characters that some of them we haven't seen since the first two or three episodes.
Yeah.
And have them pay off.
It's like the Odyssey, right? He comes back.
Yeah.
Like he comes back.
Oh, the classic hero's journey. There
you
go.
Well, what they're doing?
But that's actually the so interesting thing. I was thinking about it prior to this episode. And also, I've been rewatching a lot of the first season already. Mm-hmm. You know, typically as I do, I basically force all family members or people who know me to watch the things I like. Mm-hmm. So I made my parents watch 7 episodes over last weekend of Andor, because that's just what you do, right? Yeah. You sit down people and force them and keep their eyes open
you
the entire time
them
so they don't
to
miss
Star
anything.
Wars. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So as watching those 7, exactly, you can get eye drops. Watching those 7 episodes again and getting up to the point that it's going back to Narkeena 5, all I thought was, in no way has Cassian been on the hero's journey. He has not been on the call to adventure. He has never, adventure has just been placed upon him in a way that he doesn't want. And he's been fighting it. Now, there is always what? In the call to adventure, there's that time where there's a resistance or the pushback on it and the hesitancy. Yeah, but I don't think there's ever been the call for him. He's been trying to just live his life and be away from it all. And then he's kind of been grabbed by, you know, three different occasions where he was taken by Marva and then he was taken by Luthen.
Right.
And then in this case, he makes a decision at the end of this episode to say, kill me or take me in. But it's still almost, again, him giving himself up to someone else. And it's just interesting.
I mean, we witnessed I'm saying this value neutral. I understand that this is a very loaded word. So, you know, but we're the journey of the season has witnessing him become radicalized.
Yeah.
Right.
And that comes into sharp focus by the end of this episode.
Yes. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the graphic novel V for Vendetta. She was kind of Evie was kind of complicit in these activities and like understands that the Empire or the Imperial force is wrong, but then is not like fully there and is like happy to help but not like doing the work, and then all
not
of a sudden
an active member
exactly, and then there's like a breakdown of that person psychologically and basically hit the point where it's like they wanted to kill him because he knew too much stuff. And so now he was like, well, kill me or let me join. And like that to Luthen is basically like, okay, you're now free. Like you are ready to be a soldier in this rebellion because,
by the way,
you've sacrificed yourself willingly.
Yeah. What an amazing like commitment to tone and story that, and I was saying this to my wife while we were watching it the first time. Basically, she's watching the rough draft of my podcast with a person.
Yeah,
which
that's great.
But the fact that they committed to Luthen, who is essentially we've seen as kind of like wow, like what a great like he's kind of like he's the one who's like forming the rebellion. So of course, in the world of Star Wars, we'll be like, what a great character, that kind of thing. And I'm not disagreeing with that, but the fact that they committed to him being like, listen, like this is a dirty job and I get my hands dirty so that other people don't have to. The fact of the matter is that this person is a loose end for me. And for the rebellion to continue, he needs to die now. Like the protagonist of our story needs to die.
Mm-hmm. But, right.
And one of our other protagonists is trying to kill him.
Right.
I thought that was so compelling because he didn't like want to. He wasn't like, I'm really stoked about it.
No, but he's in the game.
He was very businesslike about it. He's like,
this is a necessity.
Yeah.
He knows the work. Yeah. He knows what he has to do. And they've painted, oh my gosh, terrible with character names. Help me out.
Luthen?
The sister and her partner.
Vel and Cinta?
Yes. They are dangerous. I mean, they're a force to be reckoned with, and it is fearsome for Cassian's life that they are looking for him.
Well, and it's like this thing of like, I'll corrupt my soul like for the right cause, where he's like, this is who I have to be. And again, obviously I knew Cassian wouldn't die. I didn't want him to die either.
Yeah.
But you can't, there's nothing wrong with Luthen's logic of it.
Sure.
You may not agree with him, like the choices he's trying to make, but there's his logic is sound.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That he's this endangers the whole thing. He hasn't interacted with Cassian in a long time.
Right.
And so also if he's still the same person he bought to do this.
Yes. And Cassian also showed that he wasn't like in it. He went to a vacation island and was like, I'm going to chill out here.
I don't think Luthen doesn't know that. He doesn't know anything about the prison.
Well, we don't know.
No, because we know he doesn't because he didn't know where he was. He didn't know what to do with it yet.
Well, the interesting thing about this whole season,
from an audience perspective, though, it's like we know that.
Yeah.
Right. But the interesting thing is that a lot of the main players who are after Cassian are after an idea of Cassian.
Yes.
And the only people that are privy to the whole thing are is us, mm-hmm. which is dramatic irony. Exactly. But it's like this whole thing is supposed to take place over the course of a year. Right. That's what Tony Gilroy said on the Mandalorian podcast, which is worth listening to.
Okay.
But he said that the first season is a year and the second season will be 4 years and that'll get us. To Rogue One.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to take place over a year. The ISB has this idea that Cassian is this like big player that they need to get, which is not the case when they start chasing him.
Right.
And Luthen knows that he's a person who he hired and had to convince to kind of go off on a job a little bit as a sacrificial lamb that he now knows is kind of gone, for lack of a better term, rogue.
Right.
But none of them know.
Yeah.
They haven't seen him in a year. So when he comes back to Luthen, Luthen's like, who's like, this is a new version of you that I'm unfamiliar with.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That irony is what really like moves this story. I mean, the whole ISB searching for him when they already have him is like, it's hilarious and tragic at the same time and like a little frustrating. And then, to come full circle to have that be that no character actually knows. Well, I mean, that's the whole thing with like these kind of organizations, right? Is that you put people in cells so you can break the cells off when you have to. And and that's what they're doing. But I think there is a specialness, and this kind of like goes back to like that Star Wars Destiny, those kind of themes kick in where it's like, no, he's like a little beyond everything here. Like he has the ability to actually unite a force by his upbringing, where he came from, his hardships being in the prison. I mean, it is kind of like the Odyssey.
But I would argue a little bit differently that, you know, the focus of the ISB has been that he is the key to Axis. He is the key for them finding Luthen. Mm-hmm. I don't think what you're talking about is any different, Ryan. Like it still has that we know everything they don't, but there's a little bit of a different focus there. But thing that really stood out to me is you see Luthen again softening as Marva is speaking, as Marva is giving the speech following her funeral. And she's giving everyone, you know, about who they are and what Ferrix has been and what it's meant to be a part of this culture and why they've been asleep and now they're awake. I think part of that is Luthen also coming to a realization that Cassian, by being her son, is a person that he might be even more valuable to him. I do think that the choice at the end is what cements it, is him coming and just being like, I will sacrifice myself or you can take me in, makes it easier for them. But I thought that speech, though, that speech and them actually focusing the camera and lingering on Stellan Skarsgård's face as that's happening showed a difference in what he felt and his perspective on the character. And I don't think he had time to call off the hit or anything like that. But I do think that all can play together with it.
Well, so I think they nail it in Rogue One. I mean, right. The whole idea is rebellions are built on hope. And I think this is Luthen realizing that hope is an actual asset here. And he might have been playing the mechanical game and the logistics and the politics of how this rebellion works, but I think he was kind of missing the liberal arts aspect of it all. Right? he knew the science of it, but he didn't understand the. And I mean, and this is why anytime they reference Last Jedi in this thing, which is like, I also appreciate that because I think the Last Jedi has a similar through line where it's like the power of the tale, the power of the story is the myth is what motivates people, which is, it's great.
And I
it's amazing that we're here, that we're at this point. Like again, where we were, and we've talked about it already, like where we were when we saw The Last Jedi in 2017 and that this show followed it eventually. To be living in this part of Star Wars is so much fun and so wonderful to think about all these conversations that it can lead to and what it can open up for all of us to consider the world and how it reflects our own world, as we've talked about. Just, I love that. And then last thing I want to say is I love how that moment comes together at the end with Luthen and Andor, because in my mind, I had no idea how they were going to get out of this and how it was going to convince Luthen that they didn't need to kill Cassian. Like no solution was presenting itself to me in my imagination of how they were going to do this without some sort of, maybe he saved Luthen's life and that's why he would owe him a life debt. But instead, They don't do that. They have this moment where it's literally him just being like, I'm either done or I'm all in.
Right.
I also think it's interesting that the institutional incompetence of the ISB kind of also leads to Cassian's radicalization in a way, because if they had known that they had him, or if they had caught him earlier on, right? And obviously, listen, I'm no fan of the ISB. What I'm saying is, Cassian
I am Ryan, as we really illustrated in one of the prior episodes. I've been a fan of Dedra for a long time.
As Cassian, as the character existed, who was just kind of like, you know, very self-interested, you know, he was a survivor. If they had caught him and just been like, who's Luthen? He would have been like, listen, I'll give him to you, whatever. You know, like, if you'll let me go, if you'll pay me, like, whatever. I have no loyalty to this. You know, this is just like a thing that, you know, people, everyone's doing their own thing. I'm just like, here. I needed to get out of trouble. Or at least that's my read of it. But the fact that they didn't do that, they couldn't catch him, they didn't realize they had him when they had him, blah, 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 let him see the lengths they were willing to go for things like this. Like the depth of the evil that they were willing to do. And that led to his being radicalized. Like that, they were what created the thing that's going to destroy them.
Well, I mean,
I just thought that was really well done. And I think that part of what's gotten lost, I think, especially in the Obi-Wan series to me a bit, and I was thinking about this while you were saying it, Chris, is that the ideas of Star Wars are omnipresent throughout Star Wars. But I think what was going on with things like Obi-Wan and stuff like that was that it was leaning too much just on like the idea of like, you know, hope. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like hope. Yeah, right. Yeah. And like that's very nice.
It's very literal. Yeah. It's very literal.
But it was cashing in on the idea that like the idea of it is enough. We were talking about that a few weeks ago about like Tony Gilroy doesn't seem to think that it being Star Wars is enough. It also needs to be compelling. And this is so much more about action, where like Marva, right? Is her? I'm like Chris. I'm bad with character names. But Fiona Shaw.
I'm usually the same way, but it's like if a show is good in after like two or three episodes, then I'm like, oh yeah, Tim with double M's. I've got Tim. Yeah. I've got Nemec. I got them all in my
head.
Mike actually prints out a little laminated 2x3-inch card.
Yeah.
And
I'll never know your address.
We'll mail you one with the characters' names.
Chris, every time they start a new Star Wars series, I tattoo my forearm. And at this point, I'm really running out.
He's riddled because you do the Marvel shows also.
Yeah, I do the Marvel shows.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with the show. I'm just so bad at knowing character names. But when Marva's speech happened, it was so thrilling because it wasn't a speech about we all, you know what? And at the end of the day, we all need hope in each other. You know what I mean? But which... Mm-hmm. Those ideas, of course, were there.
Yeah.
But the basis of it was this is a disease and it needs to go.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is, again, it's more aggressive, obviously. Yeah. And it obviously is more political on its face. And like that may rub people the wrong way. But it wasn't this thing of like, hey, everybody's got to just be nice. You know, it was this thing of like, evil is real. Fascism is real. It's a disease and we need to stop it.
Yes.
Is like what... I think whether we all know it or not on a conscious level is what made that so thrilling, because it was like, look at the action being taken by the characters, not the feelings being taken by the characters.
Absolutely. And I think also to witness, we go back to this idea that Cassian was doing a lot of this for Marva, right? He was like, I want to get this money. We can leave. We can be free of all this stuff. This is how we lost our father. Like, we could just take this money and go. And that kind of that flashback about him, how to get credits and all that stuff and how to be crafty and you kind of like utilize what you have, that to witness Cassian then see his mother figure, his mom, give that speech. He was doing all this before for her, but now he can do this still for her based on that speech, but also for the greater good of all of it, of the rebellion. So it's like, it's him learning that, oh, like I am still doing this for her. I'm still doing this for Marva, but this is part of something larger. I'm doing this for all the other Marvas and all the other Cassians.
Chris, you bring up a great point, and I think he's emboldened by her words at the end,
right,
but also by what Brazzo tells him early on in this episode when he right. says, these are the last words that she had for you. And I want to just actually find it real quickly because I want to actually share what he said, because I think it's powerful in the sense of he's had all these different things. He's had like these tools, but he's never been able to put them all together. And yeah. she gives him that final push to say that you can be all these things to so many people. You just need yeah. to bring them all together. And just like the words he says is like, tell him it's not his fault. All of it was already burning. He's just the first spark of the fire, which, hey, spark that lights the fire that brings the Empire down. That's familiar from Last Jedi.
Back to,
yeah. Tell him he knows everything he needs to know, and he feels everything he needs to feel. And then the end of it is, and when that comes together and they pull those two things together, he'll be an unstoppable force for good. Now, obviously, I just read that off, but you got to just watch the scene with Brazos well, no, and the actor and how great that is. But
that's on your left arm.
It was amazing, but also... It has just the, because I went like, this is just watching it. I was like, this is just like good writing,
yes.
which again,
yeah,
not as common as you'd hope. In stories,
yeah. Yeah.
But, or not as common as you'd hope in mainstream
in
storytelling.
Most things, yes. Yes. Yeah. In most things. Like yes. Go watch Michael Clayton and it explains yeah. why this show is so good.
Oh my gosh.
I just watched it.
She says you're being lied to, or one of us is being lied to or something. And she's like, that I know is true. Like that's what.
Oh, I know. I love that.
It's like a logic puzzle.
There's a line in Michael Clayton where this could be the rest of the podcast, but that's a movie that Tony Gilroy wrote and directed. That where every line is perfect. And he has a line in that where he's like, he says, there's one bad move in all of this and you have your arms wrapped around it. And it's like, yeah, cool. That's exciting yeah. to hear someone yeah. say. Anyway, the thing that I thought was good writing, all yeah. of that was very good, but it'd be very, very easy and it'd be fine if the last line of that was him saying, and she told me to tell you that she loves you so much or like something, you know, yeah. and like that would be moving. But the line is, she said that she loves you more than anything you can do wrong.
I know. Oh,
and like
I know.
That's
I left that part out. Writing. Why did I leave that out? Why did I?
Because you were going to cry, right?
Chills
a little bit.
Chills. Yeah, I'm crying
it
now.
It is a stunning thing for a character to say to another character, whether it's in a galaxy far, far away or not. It is, and it's like that was the end of a speech that was already great. So it's like that's the level of thought that's going into yes. everything.
Yeah.
And it's like yeah. whether you like it or not, it's like just nice to see something where someone's thinking that much about, you it's know, this line shouldn't just be a line that anyone could write.
It's an extreme care of characters. And like,
yeah, it's and that was a character who says it that's been in like, what, 15 minutes of the show?
And it's
yeah,
like,
you know what? 15 minutes of screen time
it,
that I
and they
I
say
think
it
is,
in a ditch too. They're like, in yeah. a, like, yeah. like it's not a,
it's not during sunset.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
I give it 15 minutes of screen time where it's made me want to see him celebrate the fall of the Empire more than maybe any other character in Star Ooh, Wars.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You want to see him, man. You want to see George put him back at the end of Return of the
well,
Jedi.
Yeah. Honestly,
up and around.
I really yeah. want that. I want, I'm not,
he's
I'm
waving,
not kidding.
He's
but I want the post credit scene of Andor season 2.
Yeah.
To be seeing the people of Ferrix celebrating after the Empire falls in Return of the Jedi. Well, I really want that. But
yeah.
also, I want to go back to like the speech by Marva where she's talking about it. Ugh. And tying this to Brazos again. She's talking about Ferrix and learning its culture and learning its people and learning what mattered and everything. And we see its culture in this show. And we learn about what it means to be on this planet. That again just kind of brings it all together where it's like we've gotten to know Bix. We've gotten to know Pegla. We've gotten to know Perrin's son who was tortured. You know, his son who's actually the one who builds the bomb and throws the bomb.
Right,
yeah. We get to know all these people who live and work. And then one of the people who dies, which was the guy who took the phone call from Cassian and told him that Marva had passed away. And I actually don't know his name. I need to check my arm and see what it is. But I think all these people that we've started to get to know in Ferrix, and when you tie it together with her talking about what their lives are and what it means to them and what it means to fight, again, just makes this all so much more powerful and makes me care more about the fall of the Empire than I think even the original movies did. Because at no time did we see the actual oppression, and we've seen the oppression constantly in this show. Like it's
yeah.
just been ever present. And it goes back to one of the other speeches. And one of the favorite things I saw someone say about this episode afterwards was someone said, wow, I really love the speech in Andor this week. And it's like, which one? Was it
right.
Nemec?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Nemec doing the voiceover early in the episode of his manifesto? talking about what tyranny is and how tyranny lives and how it leaks and how it's harder and it needs control
freedom
at all
times. Freedom
is
spontaneous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Freedom
yeah,
happens the, naturally. That, and control takes effort, and that's why there's cracks. Like, that, holy shit.
Put it on a sign and I'm going to be out in D.C. on the streets with it.
I mean, well, the thing of it is that it doesn't just sound nice. It actually is enlightening. You know what I mean? Like, so, and I don't mean like that we're all... It's like the line that he says, I love you more than anything you could do wrong. That is an enlightening line for someone to hear.
I was learning, yes.
Yeah. You know, like that is the kind of thing that it's not taking a feeling that someone doesn't have or that they've never had before, but it's that thing of like a perfect articulation of the things that people may not say to each other.
I do believe.
Beautiful stuff.
I do believe that. I think one of the best written lines that George Lucas ever had in Star Wars was that the more you tighten your grip, the more will slip through your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, I feel like Tony Gilroy heard that line. It's like, that's pretty cool. I'll go with that. And like, cause he uses that in a lot of different ways. And like, I feel like that's been referenced in this series many times. The idea of like the more they grasp on, the more we're slipping through. And that, and like right there, that's another example of it.
Well, it's what Luthen knows. It's almost, you know what? You could see a scene, even though they're not going to do this, but you could see a scene where Luthen says that to Leia, and then she parrots it in New Hope.
Yes.
Where she,
he's 1,000% season two. I mean, we're going to have a set piece like that. It's got to happen.
I don't think they're going to do, I can't imagine them doing any major cameos in this. It's just not what the series has been about. And I love that we've gotten two characters that had a legacy in this. In Mon Mothma and Cassian. And over these 2.5 months.
And Saw.
And Saw, you're right.
Very, who I think will probably play more of a part.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have a younger Jyn Erso or something like that.
I mean, well, maybe. But I love that we focused on the characters we have. And I think we can just talk about Mon Mothma and this. She has two scenes. Mm-hmm. And Chris, you talked about one of them where it's the scene with her husband in the back of the car. Oh, and they're talking about his gambling. Yeah. And I love, was your read on that? That, you know, she's doing so much to hide what are the financial dealings she's been making from the Empire. And even though the Empire seems to be investigating, because we see her driver meeting with Blevin later on, she's almost trying to throw them off the track where they're like, oh, she's had all these weird dealings, but is it because he's a gambler?
Oh, she's trying to explain away the money that's missing.
Yeah, right. Because he's a gambler and she knows he's listening. And even though they tell him, like, oh, he's going to turn off the listening device, well, of course he's still going to hear it all.
Yeah.
And she's putting on yet another performance.
Yes.
But yet that performance, again, continues to illuminate their relationship, despite the fact that she's making it all up. It still shows the way that their relationship is basically, you know, non-existent anymore.
Yeah.
Well, because we leave that scene. I don't think you leave the episode feeling that way. But you certainly can leave the scene being like, wait, is he lying? Not that it matters, right?
Yeah.
But it's like she sells it so well, and it's not outside the realm of their relationship that he would just kind of be like, well, what are you talking about? Shut up. Like that kind of thing.
Or I mean, or she's also like realizing that this can be an asset, like at that moment, basically.
Yes,
like,
yes, yes.
Yeah. And I think also like one thing that the ISB is kind of doing is that they're like, they're messing with him too. Like they're going to push him to gamble more. You know what I mean? Like they're going to try to compromise him and like break him down so they can get the information they want. Cause they're looking for any hiccup with anyone. Like, right. Cause Cassian just tripped. He was in the wrong place, wrong time. And then all of a sudden he's in prison for years. So like, I hope they explore that in season two, where it's like, he's going to be pinned against her. I'm sure.
By the way, that driver has the best, like, sneaky listening face. He does that thing where he, like, squints his eyes and purses his lips. Like, that was an interesting thing to hear.
The director was like, act like you're listening.
It literally sounds like all he's thinking is,
well, juicy. Ooh, go on. Yes. He's David S. Pumpkins.
Yes.
Chris, you mentioned it already. There's the mention of Canto Bight, so a little Last Jedi reference
love
in this.
That was the thing I needed. Like you know, I was like, I say how I love that it's not references. I literally I said out loud, I went, just say Canto Bight.
But also, you know, it's like Tony Gilroy is just like, what was that planet on that one movie that we watched where they gamble?
I don't even think it was that. I think someone was like, you know, there is a casino planet, Tony. And he was like, cool, fine.
Yeah, right, well, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah.
Well, someone was reading it and there was like, there's a planet for that. He went, oh, awesome. All right, great. That'll make him happy.
We don't have to make up Wobani.
Well, look, we've already talked about already that we want to see a post-credit scene where they've got everybody in Return of the Jedi celebrating. I want to see Perrin edited into Canto Bite and releases of The Last Jedi going right, forward, sitting in one of the casinos. But he's like clearly lost everything. Mon Mothma is cut him off, and he's just like sitting there begging for change on the side of the road.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a little bit malicious with my thoughts on Perrin.
It's all right. It's all right.
I didn't know he's a turd.
The only other time that we see Mon Mothma in this episode is for a brief, maybe what, 15 seconds at the end, where rather than having some, we've seen the emotion from her throughout. We've seen her dealing with it and trying to fight against what she has to do to preserve what she's doing for the rebellion. And in this scene, it's not something where it's a big and emotional fight back and forth. It's, this is now happening. We may see more of the fight go forward, but rather than even going down this road, she started with the introduction with Davos and his son, and that's where her story is going to continue to lead forward.
Yeah.
On. And you she's pained.
But, we've met her kid. It's not that much of a sacrifice.
Well, you know what? I agree. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, so they also did something in the show, which I did not kind of realize until I was watching this. So her face, if you look at her, she almost looks a little like she's got kind of a smile on her face to a degree. And they kind of preference that with the fact that she is into these old school, like conservative things. And so she might not be as like not down with this as her mom is. Like, you know what I mean? She might be like all for this, even though I'm not agreeing with it. Like, I don't think that, but I think as that character goes, I think it might not be a big deal for her.
The daughter, you mean?
The daughter, yes. Yeah, correct. And I think
she's not the brightest crystal in the Kyber.
Well, right. And I think she's already like doing these conservative things that Mon Mothma's like, I thought that we were done with all this stuff. So like, she's seeing this and she's feeling bad that her daughter has to go through this, but her daughter seems like she's kind of like, well, this is part of the ceremony.
Mon Mothma is keeping such a good cover. She's raising a child that is completely in line with the society that she's embedded in.
Exactly.
Her daughter is kind of a little turd, like her husband. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me take a second here and defend this situation for just a minute.
I'm not saying this in real life, but I'm saying for the show.
No, I know for the show. A couple things. First of all, Chris, like what you're talking about, Mon Mothma knows that this doesn't end well, even if her daughter is happy about this.
No, 100%. I'm with you on that. I'm not disagreeing with that. She knows this is a terrible thing, and I just said that.
But I also think the character of the daughter doesn't know what she's in for because she's excited to follow through the traditions that she's been told.
Exactly.
And she's going to have the rough awakening of whatever this is if she does have to be in this for the rest of her life, or is Mon Mothma going to save her from it?
Right.
Second thing I'd say to that, and I don't have teenagers, so I don't know anything about it, but we're getting a snapshot of who this girl is. And a lot of the times in storytelling and in real life, there are periods where teenagers are absolute assholes to their parents for whether it's a good reason or no good reason. And we're seeing her only at that time where she's treating Mon Mothma that way, but that doesn't change the way that Mon Mothma feels about her. And she, speaking of what Marva said, you know, I love you more than anything you could do wrong. Mon Mothma feels the same way. And no matter what her daughter Lyta is doing, she feels the same way.
Well, I mean, realistically, she hasn't done anything wrong. Her mom
It's perfectly compelling and for like Mon Mothma emotionally, and of course she'd be upset.
My whole point is,
what I'm saying is, we've met this kid, and you know, if I was Mon Mothma's friend, I'd say, listen, I think it's fine. No, of course not. Come on, if you're a new listener to the show, I'm being cheeky.
Yeah. I'm trying to give Lyta the benefit of the doubt. Yes. Also, because it could be very emotionally resonant for her to have the facade break in the next season.
Listen, these are just my stories. If this was really happening, I would say no. Yeah. That's not a good idea.
No, I know. I'm not saying that.
Speaking of which, Mike, I have something I need to talk to you about.
Oh boy.
I don't think it's good what you're doing.
Oh no.
Look, I've been selling off my firstborn for a while now, and I'm waiting for the highest bidder to come in. I don't know what to tell you.
We're going to revisit this for sure, and I think that it's going to come to a point where the daughter is going to have to realize, like, I think she's going, because we see Mon Mothma leading the rebellion. So I think there's going to be a point where it's either they're with her or against her.
My wife keeps asking what happens to Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
Like, she goes from this like fabulous, like intense woman and then ends up having a bowl cut and wearing muumuus.
Well,
and I'm very excited to find out what the answer is.
I don't know. Yeah,
I don't think they're ever going to address that. They're just going to be like, we're going to continue to give her incredible costume design.
No, I hope the last episode is like Felicity's haircut, where like they turn her around and we see the bowl cut.
Also, future warning to any Bothans, get out of there.
There's going to be a scene where she's like, I've never met a Bothan before. And we'll be like, no.
Wait, would you say you Bothans are particularly good at stealing plans? Okay, I'll remember that.
Well, throughout this episode...
That's the second Death Star, by the way.
Yes, it is. No, it is not the first.
Chris, I've been waiting to bring this up for years.
Yeah.
One time you were screening The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Not The Last Jedi, excuse me, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
In the lead up to The Force Awakens, when you used to have everybody over every week and watch a movie.
Correct.
Ryan's talking about Chris's gatherings he does for those new listeners.
I was hosting a Star Wars night
in December of 2015.
6 months up to.
Right. So this is in December of 2015 Awakens. That this happened, and I've been waiting to bring it up.
Oh, boy.
Rogue One had been announced, but Force Awakens had not come out.
Yes.
We're watching Return of the Jedi. There's probably 20 people in the room. The Bothans come up, and Chris says, that's the plot point of the upcoming Rogue One, a Star Wars story. And I didn't have the heart to say in the moment, Ryan, Chris, no, it's not.
Ryan, I need to show you the tattoo I have on my arm. There's not a day that I haven't forgiven myself for that moment.
It's like my mistaking which hand of Luke's got cut off.
You would think it would make sense
Did you cut off the same hand? So now you know.
Yeah,
I did.
You would think, though, that would be the story because it's the only time they referenced it. But whatever.
Well, they talk about these plans came at a great cost.
That's right.
It's in the scroll. It's in the opening crawl.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think
what's funny is that they had to steal the plans twice. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we already know the weakness.
Well,
wait for him to finish it. We'll shoot the vent again.
Yeah.
I think they built it a little differently this time around. Speaking of building it, jumping ahead of the post-credit screen of this. Well, we all know what they were building out on Narkeena 5. They were the pieces of the Death Star.
Yeah. I assume
I didn't see the post-credit, so that's very exciting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, for those of you who have watched this episode but did not stay for after the credits, it is actually a very, very cool, like, in the design of what they put together with the Death Star. You see these little robots piecing together what is really like the generator of the actual Death Star's laser or whatever, the Kyber laser, whatever it has. And they're taking what they were building in the prison and using it for all the panels to bring it all together.
Right.
And then it slowly kind of just reveals and, you know, fades outward to, or pans outward to all of the Death Star coming together and being built out in space.
And if you look, that matches up with the Andor logo that you see at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, when they have that shot.
I have to check it out. I didn't know. I love that. That's fun. And it's like, you know how in Revenge of the Sith, when he's fighting on Mustafar, there's like that little thing of like, this is our new plan. It's the Death Star.
Yeah.
Of course, at the end of episode 3, they're building the Death Star.
Yep.
A lot of Death Stars around this thing. I watched Force Awakens the other night where they're like, this is the Death Star and this is Starkiller Base. And it's still funny that it's just like five times as big.
Yeah, it's like, what?
A lot of other things in this episode I just want to touch on.
Yeah.
I liked, you know, obviously when we were talking about the different characters that we got to see earlier on, I really liked the moment of the flashback to Clem when it was Cassian going to the brick of Clem, his father, adopted father. And then hearing the interactions between the two of them, really it's just from Clem's point of view, but seeing again what meant to him there. But it was really powerful to me for him to go to that brick and, you know, start to see the emotion on Diego Luna's face. But also, I don't know if it's just, I have not ever thought about a gravestone in the same manner of the way they describe this, where literally the brick is the person. The person has been made into the brick from their remains.
Yeah, they've basically been cremated and compressed into a brick.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to me that's a little bit more powerful about going to visit something like a brick like that, where that is that person versus a gravestone. But honestly, I guess it's probably the same. I was very moved. I was very moved by that scene.
You know what though? Like this idea of, you know, a literalization of like, they are part of the thing that builds, you know, this community, right? Which is essentially what it is. That, like, it's,
yeah,
that's the symbolism of it. But it's, I think that's, I've never seen that before in anything.
Yep.
And, you know, if someone was like, hey, Ryan, like, when you die, we're going to compress your ashes and make it into a brick and put it in New York City, I'd be like, I like that more than a gravestone.
Well it's like, it is, again.
Chris, did you take note?
Yes, exactly. Ryan, I got you, Ryan.
Give it to me. He told me what he wants to do. Like,
he wants to be a Lego.
No. I'm going to smash this into your face if you don't
listen.
He's
a Lego set. The thing, and I've said this every episode we've done the last 12 episodes, we are learning things about the Star Wars universe. They're making new things. This is how you build out a world, is you give them details that are very specific. And this is one of them, and it's fantastic. And they not only stated it, but then they used it as a means of, A, it was a weapon, and B, it was an emotional, like, connection point for Cassian. It was just perfect.
Yeah, and he also is used to, like, beat someone over the dome.
Right. It's basically like, yeah, we're bricks, and you know what? A brick is hard as rock, and guess what it does? It beats down fascists. So we're, you don't think we just use these to build like a Walmart. we're using these to protect ourselves, which is great.
Well, I think the slow build of this episode and the tension that is throughout a lot of the episodes of Andor season one, it leads to these emotional payoffs and these emotional moments. And Chris, we talked about the involuntary reactions we've had in our last episode when watching this show. When the speech ends from Marva and Brazos hits him in the face with that brick, I just, you know, let out a huge yell and was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Was, just from a craft standpoint and pacing, the build is relentless.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is so, it has that perfect thing of like, this is so compelling, but I'm also getting impatient to like find out what happens, but in the best way, where you're just kind of like literally on the edge of your seat. Like you have a sense that it's going to escalate in some way, but you don't quite know how.
It had that to me. Like I mentioned, like it had that like 70s film quality of like building a moment when there wasn't like background score. And it's like, everyone's like getting into their positions. And like the fact that the band was playing this kind of like unsyncopated rhythm through everything, and it was like just adding just uneasiness to everything. And you didn't know where they were going. We already knew they could only have 40 people. Now there's hundreds of people. Like it was really, they gave us the, all the ingredients, and I had no idea what the cake was going to look like.
Chris, we've
talked
many... Like
any good cake. You have no idea what it's going to look like when it comes out.
We've talked about many times what we would be in our roles in Star Wars if we actually existed in the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
Ferrix's funeral band now seems like a pretty likely scenario for myself.
I'm 100% in it. And it almost looked like they were actually playing music and they just taped on other music, like instruments
Based on what we were seeing him build at the beginning, I swear I thought that the instruments were going to be blasters.
Oh,
did anyone else think this? Like, I was they're building like blasters into the instruments.
It would have been.
And then I was like, yeah, that's a cool idea, but it might look really silly to see someone like shooting a French horn.
It's a very.
I like it, Ryan.
Series.
Someone literally like blowing lasers out of the front of a trumpet.
Yep. Or the opposite of that would have been like building a, we see him building that thing and it turns out to be an instrument.
Yeah.
Like, just the music. The music brings the people.
It turns into like Baby Driver, where they're like cutting to like every instrument that's shooting. It's like the horn.
Yeah.
We've mentioned over and over again about the production design. I really hope that, again, Lucasfilm has locked up Luke Hall for the foreseeable future, the production designer for this show, because I don't know if they built all of Rick's Road in real life. And, you know, the rest of it is, there's obviously areas of green screen that fill that in or how much they built. But then as this all takes place, and you talked about it, Ryan, because we started there and we come back to it at the end, we know this area so well, and we know what's happening with this fight between them in the streets. And we know where everyone's going, and we know how they're going to potentially come together. And then as the bombs go off after the first one, and I loved when the kind of cart or carton of grenades just fell over, I just, again, was like, holy shit, here we go. because I thought it was just kind of miraculous to watch that all happen and then see everyone, you know, trying to survive and just fend for their lives as all these explosions go off. And, you know, we lose some characters. We have some that are trying to escape, and even ones we don't like are all in the midst of this. And I just thought it was really cool. And then there were some crane shots in this. There's a shot where Vel is running down Rick's Row into the smoke, I think looking for Cinta.
Great shot, yeah.
And is like, how did they do this? Did they build it like they built half of Game of Thrones? Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, that was a really great shot. How about that guy dragging the droid behind him?
Oh yeah.
I love that droid.
Oh man, I want that droid. I was so angry when the droid got hit.
Yep.
That's Bill Irwin, right? Doing the voice?
Is it? I don't
I'm
know.
I'm almost positive.
I don't think so. I actually think I saw it with somebody else's name. So,
oh, really? I'll look it up when you guys are talking.
So Star Wars, all throughout any Star Wars media, does this was one exception to the rule, where they do a thing where win-win-win, lose-lose-lose, win-win-win. And this didn't have this. This had, all right, we're fighting. And then it was kind of like, all right, well, unrest is over. The people that didn't get arrested are going home. Like it was kind of just, like flatlined out, kind of event would actually happen. Yeah. It's not like the Empire left that day. They were just like, all right, we're done fighting. Like they're still there.
I also think everybody's still trying to move in secret. You know, they're not doing this without, you know, knowing that they have to move quickly. And when they're trying to get on the ship, and Cassian's trying to get them off on the ship at the end.
I just mean, I guess there was no like real resolve to that battle. Like,
no. None,
yeah, it's kind of, and I mentioned this last episode, where it's like, I think they're going to Empire Strikes Back us, and that's how I felt leaving this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like,
it was an incredible thing to see him, in the end, make that decision, make the call. Like, you know, as we said, we left the decision up to Luthen, but like, here he is, he's now a rebel. Like, we've watched this first season, and he hasn't been a rebel, and now he's bought in, and now we get to see what he does as a rebel that builds him into the one we see in Rogue One. And that's what we're going to see in season two.
They also, and like just in the way they left things off, I obviously don't want this for the character, but for the story wise, I thought it was important that they do this for the stakes. Like, Bix has been tortured to the point of being broken. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, they don't have that thing where it's like, he's like, come on, we got to go. And she's like, give me a blaster. And they like walk out.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, she's not okay.
Yep.
Like, that doesn't mean she won't ever be okay, but it was like this thing where it's like they've like broken her brain for the time being. You aren't even sure if she knows like who's around her at any given moment. Like, she has that line at the end where she's like, Cassian will find us, right? And you're not sure if she's speaking about like Cassian being standing right there, or if she's saying it like he's not there, or that she's not aware that he's there. And that was a very good piece of performance.
I think she's been incredible throughout this entire series. Yeah, again, we talked about her face when she first started getting tortured.
Yeah.
I what an incredible piece of cast. Everything in the casting of the show. There's not been one area where it was like, wow, why did they cast this person? Everything has been perfect. Now, in season two, when Jimmy Fallon drives up on a ammunition cart, we're going to have a different conversation.
Right. Well, hey, I mean, he was in Band of Brothers, and that was my
reference. Was him in the ammunition cart in Band of Brothers.
So absolutely. I was wrong. The... what's his name? Sorry. B2 is not Bill Irwin. It's a guy named Dave Chapman who's done a ton of droid work.
Oh.
He was the performer for BB-8, I guess, in addition to Ben Schwartz and Bill Hader. He also was Lady Proxima. He seems to be a puppeteer. Yeah. So he worked on the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance.
Got it.
I think he might be in the Henson house a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, now we're even. So.
Yes. Yeah. It's true.
And, you know, I've yet to make any mistakes on this podcast, so.
He puppeteered Lady Proxima. Wow.
Hey, make Soto 2 happen. I'm just going to say.
Hey, that. I like it. Any new listeners want to join in our rebellion to make Solo 2 happen?
I wouldn't mind, but honestly, now, we're going to do another episode next week where we recap the entire season. We talk about some of our highlights. We talk about some of what we think is going to happen next. We're going to get into all of that. But I do... This show has changed what I want from Star Wars. I just don't know what I can watch next, but I have to compartmentalize that in my brain because I have a lot of fun with The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I can enjoy that while it not also being some of the best writing in television of the last 10 years. Like,
it's
okay.
This really reminds me of 2015 through 2017, where it's exciting and it feels like there's a lot of potential still.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where it's like 100%. Star Wars is moving forward. That's where it feels.
It's just wild that the series and Rise of Skywalker kind of disenfranchised me to want to go back to anything. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of sleeping on this series, and then all of a sudden the lead up into it, I honestly probably like 2 to 3 weeks before, I was kind of like really getting excited, and then once I saw that first episode, I was like, all right, wow. like I think it's one of those, we'll get into this in our next episode, but I do think it's like a gateway, and this episode that we just watched is just as worthy of the series as any other episode was.
Well, yeah, and it's it's interesting because, and you know, say it continues on this way, say Star Wars as a franchise continues on this way, then the last few years won't, like, in retrospect, won't seem that long.
Yeah, but you're right.
But when I talk about 2015 through 2017, so The Force Awakens obviously is a retread of Episode 4, but it was made new again.
It was,
and it was all new characters.
It was really well done.
Obviously, it was the first time in years. Yeah. So it was really exciting. And then Rogue One came out right after that, and it was like nothing we had ever seen before out of Star Wars. And then The Last Jedi came out after that, and it was like this perfect mix of the two, for us at least. Yeah. You know, we're big fans. But it was taking the Star Wars that we knew and literally moving it forward. Right. And then it felt like things stagnated for a while, where we were living in the Star Wars that we had for a long time. And to the point that it started to almost seem insulting. Mm. And this, for the first time in a long time, feels like it's moving forward.
We're seeing
things we haven't seen before, that, you know, there's exciting directions to go, you know.
I stand by my theory that there is a one for them and a one for us within Star Wars and Kathleen Kennedy. And maybe it was, okay, we have to do one for them, for the studio heads, because we had such a disagreement in The Last Jedi and the studio heads are making us do this, even though I don't agree with that. But then they kind of have come back and be able to make something that they feel strongly about. I mean, word is that Kathleen Kennedy is very, very proud of this, and as she should be, as they all should be who made this. And so hopefully that continues. But I think what is an interesting thing that we're going to have to find out what happens with it, Bob Iger has returned to the House of Mouse and he's leading it again. And I don't think that he is a creative CEO. However, he was the CEO that put out Rise of Skywalker. He was part of that when that all came to be. So I just don't know what that's going to mean. And obviously the financial situation of Disney right now is unique. They lost $1.5 billion in the last quarter. Ooh. So that's a lot of credits. I'm glad that they're in production already on season 2 of Andor, because they're not going to cut the budget, at least hopefully not, so that we can continue to have the show that looks like this and looks this good and has all these great things.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting just to think about what happens, because I've said it before, I would love to hear an oral history, a book, something about what that time period after The Last Jedi, before The Rise of Skywalker, and how that came to be, because it just felt like such a departure from what a Kathleen Kennedy-led Lucasfilm was doing, and who from a higher up position in Disney made them make some changes and put themselves in a position to release a movie like that. We can talk about that all later, but I agree with you, Ryan. It feels like that time again. It feels like the possibilities are endless. We've got Acolyte on the horizon, the Ahsoka series, which is not a traditional Star Wars character in terms of like original trilogy. There's some things coming up.
But it's also a new story.
Like, yeah, it's a new story.
You know, like,
right.
And it's moving forward from
it. Yes.
A story Rebels. That we had.
Yes, exactly. It's taking some of the better elements that we've had as far as story goes and hopefully continuing them.
So,
I should include, Clone Wars, the final season was during the pandemic, right? So, I mean, that notwithstanding, which I think was
fantastic. And also, we got to do a recap of Tales of the Jedi.
We do.
Right, yes.
We've got a lot that we can talk about in the coming weeks, so if you're new to the podcast, stay tuned. We've got more coming up.
We have to catch up on the Bad Batch, too. We got some stuff.
It's just been great. And, you know, anything else we want to talk about? Last thing I want to talk about this episode is that moment with BD, or BD.
B2.
I think, in Fallen Order, is when he says, I'm counting on you, B. And he's like, you always say that. And he says, you always come through. And they continue to give personality, and they continue to give like characterization and reason to care about the droid beyond an emotion to the droid, which we've had emotion for droids before, But this is a different kind of emotion, and we talked about it last week about the
grief.
Yeah,
we've seen sad droids before. I've never seen a droid be, like, melancholy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In, like, a real way.
It was very moving and very sad.
Yeah. Yeah. It was when he asked that guy to stay.
Yeah. Ugh. And also when he said he's just like, I want Marva, and he can't have Marva. He doesn't understand that she's gone. He just wants Marva. Well, you know, I think we've pretty much covered a lot of what was in this episode, other than Krieger did fall and, you know, Luthen didn't save him and the Empire celebrated killing Krieger and all of his men. So there's that portion of it. So, but I think anything else we missed we want to touch on before we wrap this up?
No, I wasn't on last episode, but I want to say what a cold open that was, huh?
Oh.
With Luthen on the ship? Oh my God.
Seriously.
Jeez Louise.
Wait.
Still.
Cold open or ending?
Wasn't that the cold open last episode?
No, that was the end of the episode.
Really?
The action sequence with him in the lightsaber ship?
Yeah. Yeah,
that was the end.
Oh, phenomenal. Sorry.
One of the coolest things I've...
Sorry, wouldn't ending.
One of the coolest things I've ever seen.
And like just again, this is an actor who I've always loved. But if you had told me Stellan Skarsgård would be like flying spaceships,
yeah,
I'd be like, I don't really think that's his thing. So this is very exciting.
I think I might go as Luthen for Halloween next year.
I'm going to go for him as for the holidays.
Lightsabers. I remember stories from my childhood.
Chris, anything else you want to touch on, or should we just wrap it up there and say we'll see you all next week?
As soon as we get done with this, I'm going to start my rewatch. So,
Well, anybody who's listening who maybe had a part in it making this show, because we know that a couple of Lucasfilm employees maybe liked our last tweet. You know, it's a one-time thing, but maybe they tuned in. Thank you. Tip of the loaf cap.
It was a great season of television, truly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
really
thank you
exciting.
For that.
It was.
I mean, we don't have to say that to the Lucasfilm employees, though. That'd be great. But I'm just saying, as a wrap up, and I know we'll talk about it more, but like, what a thrilling season of television.
Feel very fortunate again to have experienced something that again expands my world of Star Wars and expands my understanding of the world of Star Wars. It's just so special, and to talk about it with you fine fellows, you know, you always come through, as Cassian would say. Huh.
Wow. You always come through, Mike.
Yeah.
Sam always comes through, except when he's not here.
Yeah. Well, also, I'd like to learn. It's great just to learn new uses of blue milk as well. So I'll throw that out there.
Yeah.
When do you think they're going to offer blue milk you can take home from Batuu so that we can all have our cereal like Cyril?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
90. Hey, any milk is blue if you wait long enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. 90 degree Florida heat and milk. That'll work.
Well, I guess the one thing we didn't talk about was that moment between Dedra and Cyril it felt like they were going to kiss and they didn't kiss.
Yeah.
I'm just so glad they didn't kiss because yuck. Yuck.
two weirdos.
I mean, it wouldn't have felt like completely out of character for that to have happened. Meaning, you know, we've seen so many times in series and movies where heated action leads to heated moments.
Yeah, I'm glad it didn't. Like, because it would have been rote. It would have been fine. Like, it would have been like, okay, but... It just, the fact that they didn't just shows the restraint on display here.
Because they're not playing to, what would it be, the Cyril Miros? Samiros? What's the relationship name between the two of them?
Oh, yeah, the shipping name.
Oh, like what would be the shipping name?
Yeah, what would be the
shipping
name? I
don't know, tune in next time, we'll have come up with it.
All right, and don't forget, last chance to review us on Apple Podcasts. December 1st is the cutoff, and if you leave us a review on there, you'll be entered in to win an R2-D2. That is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. That's going to do it for Season 1 of Andor. We'll be back next week to talk about everything we loved about the season. We'll catch you next week on the Droids.
Annie?
Dor?
Luthen.
I'm going to tell him that it's okay to give up, that it's okay to be a failure, because it's not, Cassian. That's Good Will Hunting.
It's not your fault, Cassian. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
So you're doing Scottish Robin Williams? Yes, and I'm trying to do, like, Swedish?
Swedish?
Stone Skarsgård?
Oh, no. Oh, no.